This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, presidential hopeful John Edwards makes a push for janitors' rights, and the Cherokee Nation kicks slave descendants out of the tribe. Joining us today are Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Chicago Sun-Times columnist Laura Washington, and Bob Meadows, staff writer for People magazine. Now, guys, I know that you have been listening to Ron Walters and Clarence Page just talk about the NAACP, and I know that there's been a lot of desire to jump in on it. All right, Michael, what have you got? There's this struggle between should we change the mission of the organization or stay the course?
Well, I think that the story behind the story is that there was an internal struggle, and there was a dissing of the board members and the rank and file, what they call the blood, the lifeline of the NAACP. They thought that Bruce Gordon was arrogant and was not really a man of the people. Didn't they know what they were getting when they interviewed him? Didn't they know that he had to argue his agenda? He must have known that they must have known he wanted to turn the NAACP into another bourbon league as opposed to an urban league. But the membership is down, way down in the NAACP. The income was off. And so the question for me is not the NAACP's mission, but the NAACP, who's in control, and the board of the NAACP is the kind of board that doesn't suffer fools gladly. If you cross them, you are out. They're not like the ACLU board.
I don't know anything about the ACLU board. I don't want to say anything about them. But, Bob, I will say that a 64-member board, that's a lot of people to get consensus from.
A lot of people. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Fry.
No, no, please.
I was going to say it's a lot of people, and it's a lot of huge egos on that board. And the thing about it is that when you have that many people on a board, you have slights that go back generations because somebody's father, somebody's uncle was on that board, put them on the board. They came on as a young gun trying to change things, but the old heads on the board at the time wouldn't let them do anything. Now they're the old heads, the young people coming in. They don't want to change. People don't want to give up power. They don't want to change the course that they're going. So when you bring in somebody like a Ben Gordon who
Bruce.
Bruce I'm thinking of Chicago
Bruce,
Bulls.
Bruce who?
Coming in, wanting to change the mission of the NAACP. I really don't see how he got on there in the first place because people, they're stagnant. They're like, no, we want to focus on what we're doing now and don't you dare come and try and change us. I'm amazed. I was amazed when he got picked.
Laura, how are things playing in Chicago?
Well, I think I'm glad you mentioned Chicago because I think one of the big problems, which hasn't been mentioned in the long history of dissension, and it's a long history. It didn't start with this current president. We know Kwesi Mfumi didn't get along with his board either, and there's been disarray and dissension in this organization for at least 15 years. Part of it, one big issue, is the disconnect, I think, between the folks in the trenches, the folks that are running the local affiliates, and I know I hear that here in Chicago all the time, and the big shots in Washington and New York. And when I say big shots, I think that also gets at the issue of the dissension. You know, this is an elitist organization. It's a private boys club to a large extent. It's about personality. It's about ego, as has been mentioned by others already. And I think that's really the heart of why this organization is not getting much done, because its priority is about keeping power and creating this sort of elitist platform that's going to launch a bunch of egos from. That's the real issue here.
Well, I would have to disagree with that. The NAACP is not an old boys network or club. If you know anything about the NAACP, the NAACP's membership and its rank and file and its and virtually its leadership, including a former chair and former president, mm-hmm. have been women, and it's mm-hmm. the church ladies in the hats that control things. And if you offend those church ladies in those hats, you will be out.
Who control things or who pay their dues?
They control things, that's right.
They do the chicken dinners, and they are running yes. those organizations at the local level. And believe
Absolutely.
Me, they're not very well connected to the elitists on the board. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, I want to move on. There's a lot to say, and I'm sure that in some form or the other we'll be talking about this all week. But I want to move on to presidential candidate John Edwards. Yesterday we talked about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They are going head-to-head. John Edwards at this point not getting as much press as either of them, but he has gone to bat for better wages on behalf of janitors at the University of California, Berkeley, over the weekend. He noted that this was a continuation of a civil rights struggle that began in the 60s, and he he's done a lot of talk about two Americas, class divide, all of those issues. And he also took a moment to respond to Ann Coulter, who called him an F word on Friday. I'm not talking the four letter kind, but a more of a gender sexuality slur, and said, "It's important for all of us to speak out against language of this kind because it's a place where hatred gets its foothold." Where's John Edwards right now? Does he have appeal to the black community? I guess, Laura, I'll go back to you.
Well, I think he should have left Ann Coulter alone. Ann Coulter's in the business of bringing attention to herself by saying outrageous things. And unfortunately, that marred the presentation he was trying to make out in Berkeley. I think he has been very consistent since he ran last time and in the last several years in making the case for poverty and for the working poor. And I think the appearance over the weekend in Berkeley was another example. I think it was kind of ironic that it was in Berkeley, which is not exactly a bastion of black America, and he was trying to make the connection to the Selma March because of the anniversary. But I think he has been consistent in working with labor. He has a lot of close labor relationships. I saw him here in Chicago a year ago talking with and working with housekeepers, and I think that comes across as a sincere effort. You're right, he's getting overshadowed by Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton right now, but I think he's got a hold of a good issue.
Bob, he is in some ways the candidate who has been most clear about what he's going to campaign on. He's campaigning on this labor and Two Americas issue, whereas Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have talked about a multitude of issues. Is it smart for Edwards to be focused so much so early?
You know, I'm not really certain if it's, I guess, because, you know, we have to remember we're almost still 2 years away from this election. A lot can change in this time. Right now, I don't really know if people are going to necessarily remember what he's talking about. I don't know if they're going to remember in November of 2008 what he's talking, or even a year from now, what he's talking about right now. So, sure, he can focus on various issues, and perhaps he's trying to talk about these issues because right now maybe most people probably still associate him with John Kerry, who was, of course, from, you know, who wore his upper crust right out front. So Edwards is trying to connect with the people, and really he's got the, I guess he's got the cachet to do it because he's sort of the forgotten kid right now. And I say kid just because he's kind of youthful looking. But he's really got a great story. He's, you know, former senator, lawyer from his bootstraps type of thing. His wife, he stood by her as she had cancer. So he's got a lot going for him that, you know, if he just kind of stays the course, might begin to resonate more and more as he gets more well-known.
So, Michael, he started his campaign in New Orleans dealing with the issues of Katrina survivors. Again, does this really carry him forward as a candidate?
Well, let me call him John. John, it ain't working, period. You know, people are going to more remember the F word, the epithet for sissy, that was uttered by the blonde, skinny miniskirter, whose name I will not call. Then they are going to remember his campaign about two Americas. People don't want to hear that. And it's not working. It's not resonating. Because in a lot of ways, it sounds old hat. Janitors, Martin Luther King Jr. Everybody wants to hitch their wagon onto Martin Luther King Jr. That was a long time ago. And the issues, as Clarence Page has suggested earlier, have at least changed with respect to law. And so now it's a question of union rights and negotiation and whether or not these politicians get in the way of negotiating between management and union is, for me, a separate question as opposed to what Martin Luther King Jr. was doing with respect to promoting and fostering racial justice and social justice. So I don't think his campaign is working because it seems like he has that backdrop, that big photograph of King and the movement, and it's not related to what he's really saying. You know, the only thing I'm surprised about, following up on that F word, is that the New York City Council has not passed a non-binding resolution to ban the F word like they did the N word.
Okay, well, we'll have to keep an eye on that. Just want to reintroduce everybody in case you're just tuning in. This is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. You were just listening to the inimitable Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. We've got Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, Bob Meadows, staff writer for People magazine. Moving on to Cherokees and Black descendants in the tribe. So over the weekend, the Cherokee Nation members decided to revoke the tribal citizenship of about 2,800 200 descendants of slaves who were owned by Cherokees. Over 75% of nation members voted in favor of an amendment to the tribal constitution that would limit citizenship to tribe members that are descendants by blood. Now, this is an issue that has not just been limited to the Cherokee Nation, but Seminoles have had controversies over whether or not black Seminoles, and there are many, are given the same rights as other Seminoles. What do we make of this? Because in America, Native Americans have kind of a dual citizenship status almost, where you have people who are citizens of America, but also citizens of their own tribal nations. And there were people who were either owned as slaves by different Native nations or who were intermixed and intermarried. So does this sound like racism to, at this point in time, in the 21st century, decide to kick people out? Laura?
I think to me it sounds like money. These Indian nations, of course, have become much more prosperous in the last several years because of casino revenues, because of rights that they have rightly sought in terms of economic power. All of a sudden now they're concerned about who's a member and who's not. Well, of course, that's because of this new wealth that these tribes are attaining. There are a lot of benefits, economic and governmental provided benefits like health care, which is one of the big issues that's been debated on this Cherokee question. If you're a member of a tribe, you're likely to get to be much more prosperous, and so maybe a lot of these members don't want to share the wealth in the way they did, the way they were willing to do when they were being oppressed. I can understand on one level the issue of bloodlines and the issue of who is really a Cherokee because of the fact that the American Indians were almost exterminated in this country at one point in time. But this is clear and clearly racism.
Michael?
Well, look, this whole thing about bloodline, it's race. I don't know if it's racism. It's just a different take on that old song, Cherokee People, Cherokee Tribe, to me. And I now just must tell you that this thought of self-determination within the United States is just bogus. It's bogus. You're not going to have any self-determination. And you're talking about money. It's not money. It's crumbs. They're fighting over crumbs. Because, as we have said so many times in this program, ain't going to be no real land distribution. Manhattan ain't going back. So you're talking about the land that is left and the people trying to get their hands on what is left to them. And they're talking about voting and self-determination in the context of the U.S. Congress overseeing Indian tribes, Indian lands, Indian issues, and U.S. Indian Control Acts. And all these disputes subject to federal law and the jurisdiction of the federal courts. So ain't no such thing as self-determination, Cherokee people.
Well, okay. Michael Boyd, the point you make about crumbs is a sad point in that people of color are always very good at fighting over crumbs. They never see the big picture. You're right. The kind of economic resources that they're trying to pull in are crumbs.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, before I go to you, I want to mention, and I hope I'm pronouncing this tribe's name right, the Pequots, who own one of the big casinos, Mohegan Sun, and they are very much racially mixed. In fact, one of their tribal leaders who helped start their huge casino looks black to the black eye, if I can consider myself a black guy.
Someone must may have some Indian blood in us, huh?
Well, yeah.
We all do.
It's more that so many tribes do have these admixtures, and at this point, is it fair to separate people out?
Well, you know, I mean, you're right. Who among us is pure, so to speak? Is it fair? You know, I kind of look at this in thinking of the Cherokee doing this, I mean, no people in this country have been more marginalized or disenfranchised or cheated or downtrodden than the Native Americans of this country. And it's sort of like, you know, they had that 1866 treaty that assured the freedmen descendants that they would be, you know, part of the tribe. It took them 141 years to break that treaty. They wish the white man had taken that long to break the treaties they wrote with them. I really don't feel so uptight about this because, as Laura pointed out, these people were almost exterminated. You know, they were almost exterminated. They almost don't even exist. They're the original people in this country, or at least of the last 700 years or whatever. And they're like the smallest group here because they almost didn't even exist anymore. So I really don't have any problem with them trying to hold on to something that may have never really existed, but they're trying to hold on to it now and stay sort of who they are. And, you know, if black people sort of have to, quote unquote, suffer at that, I really don't have that big a qualm with it, big an issue with it.
All right. Well, let me make a small correction. It's the Foxwoods Resorts that the Pequot tribe owns. But I think we've done with this story and yeah. We have 2 minutes left. So I have a speed round for you. Mm-hmm. It's about pep. And what kind of pep do you have based on race? In California, a high school called Mount Diablo High School divided students by ethnicity and featured jazz music for black students, flags from Asian countries for Asian students. They had white students' rallies and Hispanic students' rallies. Now, is this a way to keep kids of different races from being bored, or is this a travesty, Bob?
Well, I think they were also going 2, 4, 6, 8, we don't want to integrate during these pep rallies. I think that was the rally cry. What really got me about this was that the reason they were keeping these kids apart is because they were hoping ethnic groups wouldn't be taunted about their scores on these various tests. Now, what is going on? I'm not outraged by this. I'm concerned to a degree that they feel that they have to keep these groups apart, much like they have to segregate blacks and Hispanics and whites in prison because they'll kill each other. And I wonder, is that what's going on here? There's got to be some more to this story.
What is going on here is racial idiocy. That's what's going on here. And it's ethnic separatism and chauvinism and nonsense. You know, it goes back with the separatism in terms of separate counseling in some of these colleges, and separate housing based on race, and separate orientation programs, and separate commencement programs, separate classes for black men at City University of New York, all based on one's race and gender. This is just racial idiocy. People, stop it.
All right.
And it's against the law.
Laura, we're almost out of time.
Well, you know, young people in high school have segregated themselves, and I think that still goes on in a lot of high schools today. You know, kids are more comfortable, you know, socializing and learning with kids that they're more comfortable with. But I don't think the school should be in the business of doing it.
And that's
all right.
What the schools are doing. It's official action. Official.
Okay. On that note, got to wrap it up. Laura Washington, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, Bob Meadows, staff writer for People Magazine, and Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
And next on News and Notes, you down with OPP? Well, the new book, Other People's Property, breaks down why rap is music to white ears. And Haiti and Ghana, two countries with one goal, independence, how they each won their freedom.